back in the early 1990s, a Thunder Bay man was told he had a genetic disease that would eventually lead to total blindness, a devastating diagnosis. But for Jim Garrels, it was a life-changing moment in other ways, too. A hydrogeologist by occupation, he asked himself, well, what can I do now to share my expertise? Then he met a pastor from Africa who told him about conditions in his home country of Liberia. As they talked, the pastor said, praying for people is fine, but prayer is not much good if there's no safe water to drink. Well, 20 years later almost, and Life Water has built some 250 wells across Africa. Jim Garrels, president of Life Water. Glenn Strongs, is the water safety inspector and treasurer of the nonprofit organization that all started in Thunder Bay. So with a bullet from the studio this morning. Good morning. 250 wells, Glenn?
Yeah, amazing. When we first started, we thought if we could drill two wells in Liberia and teach them how to do that, and then our work is done and we could go home. And that's how it started.
So tell me about the first time. Let's go back, because I gave a very small summary of how this started, but how did you get involved?
After Jim talked to that pastor and he wanted to get involved in the work in Liberia, then he wanted to find someone that could help him out with the teaching part of things, because very much the vision is to teach the local people to be able to do it themselves. We don't want to go there and do the work, but we want to be able to teach people to do the work themselves. And I have a degree in science, but also a degree in education. And we were friends, and I had offered to lend support. I would help him out the best I could. I was thinking financially, and then he asked me to go along with him. And yeah, and now it's been, wow, 20 years.
Jim, what? Tell me about the beginning for you. I mean, what intrigued you about this? What got you involved?
Well, when I realized that I might not be able to do this kind of work when I retired, I was looking for something to do now. And I wanted to use my expertise, my training, and also wanted to put my faith into action in a real practical kind of way. And after going to Kenya for the first time and then meeting that Liberian pastor, I realized, yeah, this is something we can really do. And so we got a drill rig, and we went over to Liberia to train the guys, like Glenn said. We put in a couple wells. For us, it was a real shock, because when we arrived, we found the country was in the midst of a full-blown civil war, and both of us had experiences that were quite traumatic, and we figured we would never go back again.
What happened?
Well, I mean, I had situations at checkpoints. I had a gun at my head, and looking at the guy, I thought, yeah, he's blown people away. Glenn was interrogated by a rebel general in a back room. He was pulled away from the group, and he was standing on a big blood-stained carpet with footprints and drag marks. And, you know, things like that, we thought, there's no way we're ever going to go back.
And well, I pretty much said there's no way I'd ever go back. I was quite frightened when I came back from Liberia, because I had wrote on my the little piece of paper where you go into the country, like, you know, what your occupation was, and I was, at the time, a transportation enforcement officer. And just because I had that word officer in my name, and there was a war going on, they wanted to know what a military person was doing in the country. And, boy, I had to do a lot of talking before they would let me go. It was quite amazing. It was actually shocking to see, you know, this kind of mistrust.
I think at the end of the day, though, we ended up going back lots because we couldn't forget the kids. And, we saw young children, the age of our children at the time, and they had no option but to drink out of swamp water. And, this stuff is vile. We wouldn't let our kids walk through it or swim in it, and these kids had no option but to drink it.
And you got to remember, there was, like, the Civil War, like, blew up all the infrastructure. So there was there's no sewage treatment plants. And it was a big city. Monrovia is a big city. And there's no sewage works. There's no water works. And people are drinking, like, you know, whatever they can find at the curbside or in the swamp or whatever they can get their hands on. And, you know, we're lucky here in Thunder Bay because we would have the Great Lake, Lake Superior. But they're on the ocean, and all the marshes around are salty as well. And so it was very difficult times. What we saw was, just like life-changing, that we just really felt that we needed to do more and help. And the people we work with, they're just amazing. They want to help. They want to help their fellow Liberians. You know, I'm touched by a guy named Rocky, who was a soccer player for the Liberian national team,
mm-hmm.
And so he was, well known in the country. But he wanted to give that up because he wanted to so badly to work for what we call the Lifewater Liberia. And so they started their own corporation, and he wanted to be part of that as a trainer and going out to all the villages and talking to people about sanitation and repairing hand pumps and well drilling, that he gave up his position on the team.
You're kidding.
No.
Well, we didn't even realize. We just knew him as Rocky. And then one day we're driving in a vehicle down the road, and total strangers going, "Hey, Rocky, Rocky Cole, hey, Rocky." And it's like, "Well, what's the deal, Rocky?" "Oh, I like playing soccer." "Oh, yeah, where do you play?" "Oh, Brazil, Peru."
And we're like, "What?" Because everywhere we went, really, it was like, you know, you see a couple of white guys in the back of a pickup truck, and they'd be saying, like, you know, "Hey, white man." But now we're driving around with Rocky, and it's like, "Hey, Rocky." And we're like, "Wow, what's going on here?"
Pretty amazing. Yeah. Women, because you've said guys a fair amount there now.
Yeah.
What kind of a role do women play in this, though? Because they sort of carved themselves out a rather unique stake in this. Tell me about that.
You know, we had a bit of an inspiration or epiphany moment a couple years ago when we went to a well that we had drilled in 1996, one of the first wells, and it was still functioning perfectly while other wells have fallen into disrepair. And this particular well was being taken care of by a guy called Emmanuel, and he had adopted this well as his personal love and joy and was a caretaker for it. He guarded it, he painted it, he oiled it. And that inspired us to start a caretaker training program where every pump now has a caretaker. And by and large, it's women taking on that role. They are being trained up. They are taking the ownership because it's a woman's issue to haul water and provide water for the families. And so every pump that we're installing now has a woman who's in control of that pump. She locks it and unlocks it in the morning. Same thing in the afternoon again for water. She's in charge of getting any financial contributions towards the pump maintenance, making sure it's kept clean, making sure people aren't abusing it. If there's long queues that build up to haul water, making sure that young children aren't pushed out of the way by older people, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And that's critical.
I think when I said there in the beginning that you had gone over there to build two wells and some 250 later, I mean, how on earth did that happen?
Well, it was really interesting because I even brought a note from a person who donates money to Lifewater. And he says in here, "Thank you for allowing us to be part of the organization." And it's like, that's the kind of response that has happened. A lot of people really understand the importance of water, especially, you know, in the light of Walkerton and those kinds of things. So people understand that, and they want to be able to help. But not everybody can go there and do something. You know, what can people do? And it's like, we are now, every time we drill a well, we find a sponsor for it. And
how do you do that?
Well, we just talk to a lot of people. And you should see my email account.
I bet you.
And we actually have people helping us now with our email because there's so much email. But there's schools that are raising money. There are just individuals. Like, there's an individual lady in BC who's just passionate about this. And she just mobilizes people. She talks to people. And every time there's about $3,000, we can sponsor another well. And it just, like, it's, we always say it's just, like, one well at a time.
I think one of the real critical things, how 250 wells has come about, is we focus on going and providing training to local people. And that gives them a real sense of ownership of the projects. And then they work full-time drilling wells and building washrooms and having hygiene workshops. So we don't have people like ourselves, white guys, in charge. It's African people having their own organizations. They are there working around the clock while we are back here at our own jobs and our own homes. And then, we, like Len said, we help find and match donors to wells that otherwise these villages would never be able to afford. And, you know, just as a little sidebar, last night we got a call again from the team in Nigeria that we have there. And they are drilling way up country, and they finished a well that a hairdresser in southern Ontario decided to sponsor by putting out a bin and asking people to put some their tips into. And she got enough to sponsor a well. So they went way up country. They just finished the well 2 days ago. And two village chiefs have come up to the drill team and said, "Please do not take the drilling equipment away. We need to have wells in our village." And so we got a call last night, "Can we please sponsor these two wells while the rig is still up country?" And, you know, I was saying to Glenn before we came in here, if we could get even 100 people listening this morning to give $20, $50, $100, you know, whatever they can afford, these two wells can go in. And so we took a step of faith and told them, go ahead and drill one, and we'll see what happens if we can drill another one. And if people are interested in giving a gift to somebody they don't know what to get for, or want to pass on one dinner and make the contribution, all they have to do is go to lifewater.ca on the internet, or they can phone 622-4848, and we can get these two wells in before Christmas.
You think?
Absolutely. The team is there. We told them to start drilling this morning.
It's that immediate. It's you can do things that quickly.
Well, and that's because we are not the ones actually doing the drilling. We're not the ones actually building the washrooms. It's training and equipping and mobilizing the local people, people like Rocky, who want there, they live there, they know the communities, and they have the passion for it.
I bet you're going to get that other well.
Well, we sure, it certainly would be a real ultimate Christmas gift for those villagers.
Yeah, no kidding. Eh? Lifewater.ca, before I let you go, the website is terrific. I mean, the photographs there of the kids and the photographs of the what people were drinking previously and what the well has done, it's simply amazing. That clarifies it for everybody right there. They can see,
yeah,
see the work.
Yeah, absolutely.
When are you going back?
January 12th or 14th. It's right in January again. We're heading back again, and the Liberian team, they bought some property, and they actually want to start building a compound. And this is, we're not paying them much to drill these wells, but they're taking the little bits they have, and they're putting the money back into the program, and they want to have a warehouse so they can store their equipment inside. So, you know, we're seeing, you know, there's real dedication to do this, and we're not pushing them along. They're dragging us with them, you know.
You know, one of the things that keeps us going, too, is that it's a real encouragement for our faith, and we've learned that God has a great sense of humor. So we were sitting there in early November on the property that they had bought. We drilled a well, and then I was standing there thinking, boy, we need somebody like Alex here to build a septic system. And he's a fellow I worked with 15, 20 years ago, haven't talked to him since. He's a septic system specialist. Came back from Africa, opened up my email, and there was an email sitting there, and it said, "Hi, Jim, you may not remember me. My name is Alex, and I'm just wondering what I can possibly do to help out Lifewater."
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, boy, once you have things like that happen over and over and over again, it's just a sense of, yeah, this is, we're doing what we're called to do here.
Wow, amazing stories. Thank you for coming in this morning. It's been a real honor, and good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.